I don't know about you, but by nature, I'm no risk taker. Kayaking on a peaceful lake, watching wildlife is lovely, but I'm not remotely tempted to take on class 5 rapids. I like hiking on marked trails rather than bushwalking through the wilderness. And you might find me cross-country skiing on a flat path, but you'll never see me tackling a triple black diamond downhill run. When it comes to facing an unknown risk, I'm more likely to turn to a movie or a book. There I can vicariously enter into a thrilling or dangerous experience from the safety of my own home. Maybe I need a grown-up version of those choose-your-own-adventure children's books. They're so popular when my kids were growing up. Maybe you remember those. It's a second-person story, and the reader takes on the role of the protagonist, and after a few pages, faces two or three options in terms of what happens next. Each of these lead to more options, and eventually to one of many different endings. There's no way to guess how long the story will be or what will happen at the story's end. Hence, the books offer a realistic sense of unpredictability, and that's part of the fun. I think a part of why I don't like real-life unpredictability is that I grew up in a household where domestic violence periodically erupted. As was true of his father when he was growing up, my dad's own demons could unexpectedly appear, and did so a couple times a year. Suddenly, he could lash out in violent ways. Through counseling, spiritual direction, and prayer journaling over many years, I've grappled with these difficult experiences, and with the support and encouragement of people of faith, I'm grateful to say that I've found a good measure of healing, including considering myself a survivor more than a victim who found coping strategies and was given the strength I needed along the way. At the same time, I find that I need to continue to integrate these experiences, for they'll always be part of my story, and I want to understand how they may still impact me and my relationships. I know I need to keep taking the risk of growing and being changed. It's the kind of hard, good work that I know many of us here have done and continue to do as we come to terms with our various life experiences and then choose how we want to live on as the protagonists in our own stories. Towards that end, this morning, let's consider the story of Onesimus, a hidden figure in this very short letter from Paul to, I've always said, Philemon. And if I'm not going to be able to jump at this point. From the text, we can presume that Philemon is a wealthy friend of Paul's who hosts a house church. Paul sends Onesimus, a person who was previously enslaved by Philemon and has escaped or been sent away, to deliver a pointed request to Philemon. Paul wants him to welcome Onesimus back, no longer as a slave, but more than a slave, a beloved brother. Somehow, Onesimus finds the strength to return to Philemon's home, not as an enslaved person, but standing tall, with a letter from Paul affirming his new identity as Philemon's equal. A full partner in sharing the good news of God's love for all, a beloved brother in Christ. What strikes me most about this story is the uncommon courage that Onesimus would have needed to summon in order to go back to the very place where he was enslaved and face the very person who apparently still legally owned him. There was real risk there, and reauthoring his story like that was a gutsy move. What was the source of Onesimus' courage? And what might this hidden figure's example mean for us? In his preface to Philemon in the Message, Eugene Peterson argues, every movement we make in response to God has a ripple effect. touching family, neighbors, friends, and community. Belief in God alters our language. Love of God affects daily relationships. Hope in God enters into our work. Also, there are opposites: unbelief, indifference, and despair. None of these movements and responses, beliefs and prayers, gestures and searches can be confined to the soul. They spill out. They make history. Peterson goes on to say, Philemon and Onesimus had no idea that believing in Jesus would involve them in radical social change. But as the two of them were brought together by this letter, it did. Now, as Cindy Lapp, pastor of Hyattsville Mennonite Church, has noted, the book of Philemon is not without its problems. For those in slavery, for those who have slaves, for a house church that's trying to live by the new values set by Jesus. Why is Paul sending a man who safely escaped slavery right back into that situation? We also do not get the idea that Paul's trying to overthrow slavery in all the house churches. His appeal is only to this one slave owner for this one enslaved person. There's not even mention of other slaves in Philemon's household being freed. In addition, as a free person and member of the majority culture in the U.S., I'm certainly not claiming that I fully understand the experience of a person who's been enslaved. And nor am I arguing that people who've experienced trauma of any kind should do anything that doesn't feel safe or right for them. Moreover, we don't even know how this morning's story turns out. We just have this letter, this request, hanging out there. Still, the letter survived, and rather surprisingly, it became part of the canon, which leads many scholars to argue that Philemon and Onesimus likely did risk a new relationship. Onesimus embracing a new identity as follower of Jesus and Paul's helper. Philemon affirming that his primary identity is in Christ too. I can't help but think that this impacted other relationships, rippled out into the rest of the house church as well. For I think that in the end, this is a story about God changing a beloved community, about various people in that community reauthoring their stories in ways that were more like what God had in mind for them and for the world. It's about Onesimus being recognized as a real partner in sharing God's love for all, and how that helped him find the agency he needed to risk claiming and living into his full place as a valued community member. I think it's about Paul challenging Philemon to change and reauthor his story too. I also think this story is about the big idea of God's reconciling mission in the world, and how a big theological idea like that becomes reality to the degree that we allow it to play out in our lives and world. How might the Spirit be inviting us to partner with God in reauthoring our individual stories in good and healthy ways that spill over to our community here at CMCL and beyond? How might we find the courage we need to take that sometimes risky step? And how might we support one another well as we can, along the way? Our desire and intention at CMCL is to do our best to remind one another and those whom we encounter that all are loved and known and loved by God and are a valued part of God's healing work in the world. While none of us communicates that perfectly, we know that this simple message has real power for us and for all people. Bishop Desmond Tutu described the power of this kind of message in an On Being interview with Krista Tippett a couple of years ago. Reflecting on life under apartheid, he laughed incredulously as he said, "If these white people had intended keeping us under, they shouldn't have given us the Bible." When you discover that apartheid sought to mislead people into believing that what gave value to human beings was skin color or ethnicity, And then you saw how the scriptures say it is because we are created in the image of God. Each one of us is a God carrier. No matter what our physical circumstances may be, no matter how awful, no matter how deprived you could be, it doesn't take away from you this intrinsic work. One saw just how significant it was. Tutu went on to describe a small congregation he served. Most of my parishioners were domestic workers. The white employers most frequently said that the person's name was too difficult to pronounce. And so most African women would be called Annie. And I would say to them, when they ask who you are, you say, me, I'm a God carrier. I'm God's partner. I'm created in the image of God. As beloved members of the kind of community that tries to remind one another who we really are in the eyes of God, we can find the courage we need to reauthor our stories. We can risk being changed for our own healing and for the good of the world. I'd like to close with this prayer from John O'Donohue. It acknowledges our toughest life experiences as well as gifts of survival and resilience we may glean along the way. It also welcomes wonder and the possibilities for healing and health open to us today. A morning offering. I bless the night that nourished my heart to set the ghosts of longing free into the flow and figure of dream that went to harvest from the dark bread for the hunger no one sees. All that is eternal in me welcomes the wonder of this day, the field of brightness it creates, offering time for each thing to arise and illuminate. I place on the altar of dawn the quiet loyalty of breath, the tent of thought where I shelter, waves of desire I am sure to, and all beauty drawn to the eye. May my mind come alive today to the invisible geography that invites me to new frontiers, to break the dead shell of yesterday's, to risk being disturbed and changed. May I have the courage today to live the life that I would love, to postpone my dream no longer, but do at last what I came here for, and waste my heart on fear no more.